Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear brothers and sisters. Thank you guys for rejoining us. We are talking about Sayyida Fatima al-Ma'soom alayhi salam to Shaykh Muhammad. Before the break, we talked about the fact that she has a high status and a high level. Yes. From this comes the factor of visiting her and visiting her grave is a reason that we enter paradise, that it's rewarded with paradise. And we're talking about that connection, about how you gain paradise and by visiting the graves of the Imam alayhi salam. Yes. And such holy figures and significant figures such as Fatima al-Ma'soom alayhi salam. And we cut you off short right there.
Thank you. Well, next step, as I talked about before, we're going to delve through the ziyarah, the supplication, the ziyarah supplication of Fatima al-Ma'soom, to see what has been narrated by Imam Reza Sarawatul Alayhi. When you go there, what we should supplicate. Well, at first, it has some customs. The first custom is to say 34 times Allahu Akbar, 33 times Subhanallah, 33 times Alhamdulillah, and then you should start the supplication. What does that mean?
We see that also in Ziyaratul Jama'ah as well.
Yes. For example, Alamatul Majlisi, which is one of the most renowned scholars of Shia.
The one that wrote Bahar
al-Anwar.
Wasn't writing Bahar al-Anwar, was collecting the sayings from different books.
And in that book also you can see very expert ideas of Alamatul Majlisi
on the narrations,
which tells us about the deep knowledge and understanding of Alamatul Majlisi about the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Allama talks about this fact that before Ziyaratul Jama'ah, right? Why Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam have said you should say these kind of words 100 times, all of them totally, and then start. He interprets in this way. He says that it is most probably because of the fact that when you study the ziyarah supplication, you see some sentences that you become confused. You become so surprised. A lot of people might think that these kind of virtues and these kind of things are only true for God. But when you study Ziyaratul Jama'ah, when you supplicate it, you see that they have been attributed to Ahlul Bayt, some created figures in this universe, right?
Yes.
So Allama says that Imam Hadi alayhi salam before Ziyaratul Jama'ah has told us to say these words 100 times, to first glorify God.
Yes.
That we are not going to mistake you by any other thing you have created. No. We're going to first glorify you. First we're going to just fix your standing. And then we're going to talk about Ahlul Bayt and understand their standings by the word of Imam Hadi.
So you're just putting in your mind the difference between Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and His creation.
Yes.
And that there is nothing like Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. لَيْسَ كَمِثْلِهِ شَيْءٍ.
Yes. So also we see before the ziyarah of Fatima al-Ma'soom that these 100 words which should be said before the ziyarah have been brought as customs. You should do that. It means that the content of ziyarah is so rich, and if a normal person is going to study and to read it, that normal person might realize or might figure out, might think that how can just a daughter of Ahlul, not an infallible imam even, right? How can a daughter have this much virtue in the eyes of Allah?
That really just goes back to the high status that she has.
Yes.
And it's like how we talked about Sayyidah Zainab alayhi salam. Other than Sayyidah Zainab, as well as, for example, normal companions of the Imam alayhi salam, there are also women companions that also reach these high statuses because of the falling of the Imam alayhi salam.
Yes.
Right?
Which, yes, this is a very important fact, the following and being submissive to Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, which I'm going to talk about that later, inshallah. So we go into the ziyarah. It starts with giving salam to the prophets first, to the five prominent prophets.
As-salamu ala Adam. Ulul-azm.
Ulul-azm, yes. As-salamu ala Adam, as-sahwatullah. As-salamu ala Nuh, al-Nabiyullah. As-salamu ala Ibrahim, khalilullah. As-salamu ala Musa, kareemullah. As-salamu ala Isa, Ruhullah. And then it starts to talk about the last prophet, the holy prophet, Muhammad sallallahu
alayhi wa sallam. Just before that, we stated Ulul Azim, and of course, Adam alayhi salam was not of the Ulul Azim.
Mm-hmm. So yes. So, because, you know, being prominent or Ulul Azim, as you said, is one of the highest standings of the prophets. But about Adam, salawatullahi alayhi, as to be the first prophet and also in the words
the
of...
The father of all prophets.
Yes, the father of all prophets. We also see such mention in the ziyarat.
Such as ziyarat al-Warith.
Yes, Warith and ziyarat al-Amir al-Mu'mini alayhi salam. But the important fact here to talk about is we are as a follower, right? As a lover of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. Or let's say simply as a Muslim. You are going to the shrine of Fatima al-Masuma and you start by declaring your beliefs first about the prophets, about their high standings, that you respect them and you send them a salam, right? What does that mean? And when we go through it, when we go through up to the end of the ziyarah, we understand the fact that a brief total review of the things that we believe as Muslims and the thing that we believe as followers is going to be repeated and recited and supplicated in this ziyarah, which is very important. This is something we just see in the supplications of Imams alayhim as-salam, Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, right? And also we see in the supplication of Fatimatul Ma'asuma.
I'm going to have to cut you short there, my brother, and we will continue on the Inshallah. Coming show. Sorry. Dear brothers and sisters, please join us again so we will continue talking about the Ziyarat Nama or the supplication of greeting the Sayyidah Fatima al-Masuma alayhi salam. From now until then, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The latest challenges in the Muslim world. This is the main theme of this gathering, attended by political activists. On top of the conference's agenda was the French government's recent blasphemy to Prophet Muhammad, which triggered worldwide condemnation from Muslims and religious leaders.
Insulting the Prophet of Islam is tantamount to blasphemy against all other religions. The divine books of Christianity and Judaism both speak highly of the last prophet named Muhammad. Religions don't have any issues with each other. As a Jewish scholar, I believe what the French president said against Islam is unacceptable. He has ignored the sentiments of around 2 billion people.
Delegates also condemned Sudan, Bahrain and the United Arab Emirates for their normalization of ties with Israel. Last month, Sudan became the fifth Muslim country after Bahrain, the UAE, Egypt and Jordan to establish diplomatic ties with Israel. Delegates at the conference called it a strategic folly and a backstabbing of Palestinians who have been suffering under more than 7 decades of Israel's occupation.
Those treacherous regimes have never cared about the interests of Muslims. They only seek to consolidate their foothold as rulers. I'm sure that the people of Bahrain, the UAE, and Sudan do not share the stance of their regimes toward Israel. Muslims will never recognize Israel and its occupation of Palestine.
Although the Arab-Israeli détente infuriated the Muslim world, activists say it should not come as a surprise and is only a revelation of their long-standing covert ties. This is why they believe the move will not lead to a seismic shift in regional power balance.
Experts here find the root cause of regional crises and lack of coordination and a growing chasm between regional states. They say external players such as the U.S. never want this gap to be bridged, since such a division has long been a chance for them to serve their interests in the region. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
In an official visit to Afghanistan, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh is seeking to boost ties between Kabul and Tehran via expanding mutual cooperation, mainly in terms of peace and security.
Security of Afghanistan is our high priority. We think that the security of two nations, Iran and Afghanistan, are very much connected to each other. So we think that through collaboration, through cooperation, we have to be able to secure a stable situation in Afghanistan.
The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman comes as many here believe Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and that is why players like Iran are struggling to keep their role in the country's peace and security.
Afghanistan is entering a new phase, and all regional players have developed new plans in line with their own interests. For instance, Daesh is replacing the Taliban in Afghanistan. The visit of Iran's foreign ministry spokesman to Kabul proves Iran's effort to expand its role in Afghanistan's security.
The visit of Iran's delegation comes as Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan visited Kabul last week.
The recent political trips of Afghanistan's eastern and western neighbors to Kabul are a proof of importance of the country to them. That is especially at a time when insecurity is on the rise and negotiations are underway between the Afghan government and the Taliban to bring a lasting peace to the war-torn nation. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A debate on fundamental rights in the EU has just concluded in the European Parliament. COVID-19 lockdowns and reduced access to services due to the pandemic have apparently made the elderly more vulnerable, and other groups too.
Women, children in poverty, and people with disabilities.
The 27-nation bloc's asylum system was castigated during the debate.
We have migrants left to rot and fester in camps, while boats of pregnant women and children are pushed out to sea by state forces in Greece. We have migrants raped with the branches of trees by state forces in Croatia. We have Muslims hounded in France.
It's claimed the EU's attitude towards refugees is facilitating abuses both within the bloc and in neighbouring countries.
Greece, Turkey, Poland, Belarus, Spain, Morocco, Hungary, Serbia, and in some countries, Croatia, they even face torture, humiliation, and sexual abuse.
Governments in EU nations, such as Czech Republic and Hungary, are fueling Islamophobia by the way they are dealing with the refugee crisis, according to experts.
They've sought to interpret that crisis as a one of Muslim invasion. And government narratives, when they're deployed in that way, can be very strong.
Other fundamental rights abuses in the EU are also being highlighted. Spanish authorities are criticised for imprisoning activists in Catalonia.
We spend all our time asking Hungary and Poland to act like genuine democratic states, but we don't do anything on Spain. Without civil and political rights, the European project is done for.
Some lawmakers accuse the EU of hypocrisy in terms of how it tries to export its values.
Let's just take one example, cozying up to Israel and Saudi Arabia, which have appalling human rights records, while at the same time imposing really tough sanctions against countries such as Russia and Iran. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The Gaza Strip has logged more than 15,000 COVID-19 infections and over 65 deaths, mostly since late August. Since Thursday, around 3,000 infections were detected in the impoverished enclave. Hospitals in Gaza currently have less than 100 ICU beds and ventilators for nearly 2 million inhabitants. 80% of ventilators for coronavirus patients have already been taken up. The World Health Organization cautioned that within a week, the health system in Gaza may become unable to care for critical cases.
The situation is becoming extremely dangerous in Gaza amid rapid increase of coronavirus infections, and people here will continue to suffer. The health sector is already fragile and in a very bad shape because of the Israeli blockade. The health system will soon be unable to deal with the coronavirus pandemic and other health needs.
Despite the increasing number of coronavirus infections, the Israeli regime continues to place tight restrictions on the entry of humanitarian supplies, including medical equipment.
Israel has systematically destroyed Gaza's health system and almost paralyzed its ability to provide health services by refusing to allow in vital medical equipment amid the apathy of the international community. Unfortunately, some Arab regimes are normalizing ties with Israel and encouraging it to perpetrate more crimes against the Palestinian people.
Local authorities have been desperately fighting to prevent the devastating outbreak of COVID-19. According to Palestinian officials, the Israeli blockade imposed on Gaza is one of the main reasons why tackling the deadly pandemic is particularly difficult.
The blockade has taken its toll on all aspects of life in Gaza, especially on the health system. The health system is struggling with the logistics, lack of medical equipment, as well as testing kits for the virus and hospital ventilators to keep patients alive.
Rights groups warn that Gaza is facing a catastrophic situation under the watchful eye of the international community.
Experts say Israel's illegal practices have compounded the risk of coronavirus infection for nearly 2 million Palestinians, making it extremely difficult to combat the pandemic. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Cafes, restaurants in Catalonia are back in business after a prolonged coronavirus shutdown that impacted thousands of businesses, pushing angry workers out on the streets in protest. Following a sustained decrease in the daily number of COVID-19 cases, the regional government scrambled to improve a plan to reopen the economy unveiled last week by increasing operating hours and adding concert halls to the list of businesses that can reopen.
We are very happy to be back to work and hope this is the last time we shut down because it will be the end for our business. I cried every day when I was out of work because I have a family to feed. We are worried. We can't fail this time.
Under the new guidelines, food service businesses are able to operate indoors at 30% occupancy, while they can serve at full capacity on terraces, provided they keep a 2-meter distance between tables. The 4-phase reopening is expected to last 2 months, with a gradual lifting of restrictions on movement inside of the Spanish northeastern region. A 10 p.m. curfew will stay in place for several weeks as the situation in hospitals and intensive care units remains critical. Meanwhile, authorities have launched massive antigen testing campaigns across the region in a bid to control the spread of the virus.
The antigen rapid test detects the COVID-19 virus using a nasal swab. It offers a highly reliable result within 15 minutes, and it is one of the most cost-effective tests on the market right now.
Although test sensitivity for rapid antigen testing is generally lower than for the standard PCR, authorities are pushing for their deployment, arguing they could be useful in detecting highly infectious people. With a population of 7.5 million, Catalonia has registered over 300,000 cases of COVID-19 and over 15,000 deaths since the start of the pandemic.
The reopening of the economy in Catalonia is fraught with its fair share of risk and reward for everyone involved. It will take at least 2 weeks to find out if the second shot at the virus was successful. The stakes for the food service, hospitality, entertainment, and sports industries have never been higher. Kusai Kadri, Barcelona.
Some 120 kilometers from Srinagar, the summer capital of Indian-administered Kashmir, lies Uri. The line of control that divides Kashmir into two parts and ruled by India and Pakistan runs through this area of Baramulla district of Indian-held Kashmir. After trekking around 10 to 15 minutes, you reach the Smurthal village, which is frequently a target of India-Pakistan animosity. Parviz Ahmed's house was completely destroyed in the recent India-Pakistan face-off. Although his family was lucky enough to survive this devastating attack.
This is not new for the people who live near the LOC. But this time it was a rain of artillery. Years of my toil is wasted. I and my family of five are homeless now in this winter. The fire even burned the food stock that I had stocked up for the winter months.
Weeks have passed since the incident. Parvez is still waiting for help and relief work to begin.
We have repeatedly asked the government to build bunkers for the people living in this area. The government is not paying attention to our needs.
The Jammu and Kashmir administration is working on a project to construct 44 bunkers for people living along the line of control. They said that another project for building some 250 individual bunkers is underway.
Whenever we go to government officials with a request, they often turn us away. Many times they say, go and seek help from Prime Minister Narendra Modi. Whatever is being said about help and relief is a media stunt, a part of which might reach us but too late.
For decades, Kashmiris have been bearing the brunt of India-Pakistan animosity. The two countries have fought two of their three wars over Kashmir, which they rule in parts but claim in its entirety. Kashmir has lost tens of thousands of people after the armed struggle against Indian rule began in 1989. India accuses Pakistan of training and sending fighters into Indian side of Kashmir, something Pakistan denies but says it only supports the idea of free and unified Kashmir, politically and diplomatically. The question that remains is how long will Parvez and many others like Parvez wait for government's assistance? Can they survive this harsh winter without a proper shelter? And how long will it take the world to stand for the resolution of this long-pending dispute without further destruction? Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
As the European Council is set to convene in December to discuss the tensions with Turkey, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan has called for dialogue, but warned the EU not to become a tool for enmities during escalating tensions over the Eastern Mediterranean. In his latest statement on Turkey-EU ties, Erdogan said Turkey sees its future in Europe and mentioned Turkey's post-pandemic plans to improve judicial infrastructure and strengthen the economy and other reforms.
We see ourselves as an inseparable part of Europe, with which we share 600 years of historical bond. We are calling on the EU to create a closer bond with us, to keep the promise of full membership for Turkey. We see ourselves in Europe, not anywhere else. We aim to build our future with Europe.
Observers, however, say Turkey does not stand any chance to become an EU member, despite all negotiations.
In my opinion, the EU does not see Turkey either as a partner or a possible member of the bloc. For the EU, Turkey is only a trade ally. This means that neither now or in future, Turkey will not get closer to becoming an EU member.
Earlier this week, the EU's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, said Turkey isn't sending positive signals and needs to change its attitude fundamentally regarding the hydrocarbon dispute with EU members Greece and Cyprus in the Mediterranean Sea. European leaders say they will watch for Turkey's steps in the next couple of weeks before discussing any potential sanctions in their upcoming summit. Turkey is still a candidate to become an EU member. The bloc decided to effectively freeze accession talks in June 2018 over disagreements on accession terms. Many here are pessimistic about the future of accession talks, despite Ankara's ongoing efforts to meet the EU's demands. Meanwhile, some economists even warn that the accession could harm Turkey's economy. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Israel launched airstrikes in the early hours of Sunday on the Gaza Strip, causing damage to surrounding areas, but no casualties reported. Israel claims the airstrikes targeted Hamas positions and came in response to a rocket fired from Gaza toward the southern city of Ashkelon, the second time in 2 weeks.
Israel is not committed to its responsibilities, refusing to allow in the required ventilators for the enclave amid the coronavirus pandemic. The resistance front preserves the right to give a crushing response to those violations.
The Palestinian groups say they will continue their resistance as long as Israel is imposing its crippling blockade over the impoverished enclave, especially amid the coronavirus pandemic and the shortage of medical equipment and ventilators.
It is the resistance movement's duty to defend Palestinians against the Israeli aggression under any condition. Israel should be held accountable for the deterioration of the Palestinians' lives. This is a crime against Gazans.
Observers say Israel's refusal to meet the basic needs of Palestinians increases the possibility of further escalation.
The ongoing conflict comes as a result of Israel's suffocating siege on the Gaza Strip over the past 14 years. Palestinians won't remain silent. Through strikes like the recent ones, Israel is seeking to cover up its internal problems.
Israel has been conducting similar strikes on Gaza Strip over the past months.
The resistant groups here stress they are ready for any possible escalation, and the resistance will go on until the crippling siege on the Gaza Strip is broken. Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
With almost 100,000 children under the age of 5 at risk of dying, Yemen slides into a dire situation. Here lies the 9-month-old Munir struggling to survive a severe malnutrition.
This is my son Munir. We've been here for a week. We want to treat him for malnutrition, and God helps us. We're resisting this savage war.
The ongoing war and siege imposed by Saudi Arabia has brought a severe famine described by the UN as the worst humanitarian crisis in the world.
There is an increase in malnutrition cases. Yemeni children are suffering from malnutrition in all governorates, and we receive 50 to 60 cases per day. There is a shortage of medical equipment like CT scanners.
The UN's former humanitarian coordinator for Yemen described the country's food security status as catastrophic. Now, a UN analysis shows that the coronavirus pandemic, economic problems, and the war have pushed malnutrition the highest levels in some parts of the country. According to the UN study, malnutrition has risen 15% among children under the age of 5 this year.
We condemn and denounce the continued international silence about the blockade imposed on Yemen and the failure to take any measures against the Saudi coalition, which has exacerbated human suffering, especially for children.
Millions of children in Yemen could be pushed out of starvation by the end of the year, as the humanitarian crisis is compounded by the ongoing war and the blockade, along with the pressure of funding shortage as the world grapples with the coronavirus pandemic. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
A large number of people turned up in the garrison city of Rawalpindi near Pakistani capital Islamabad. These angry youngsters were outraged against India over its alleged unending brutalities against Muslims in disputed Kashmir region. So were they resentful against Israel for suppressing Muslims in the occupied Palestine.
Equally, these protesters are angry with the rulers of many Arab states over their alleged collaboration with India and particularly with Israel in strengthening their illegal hold of territories belonging to the Muslims. But it seems for these protesters, there is a leadership vacuum in the Muslim world.
This protest was organized by Youth Parliament, an organization of students of colleges and universities from all over Pakistan. They have been campaigning to forge greater unity among Muslims across their racial and sectarian profiling and regions. With greater unity among the ranks and files of Muslims, these students are struggling to bring an end to the atrocities being committed against Muslims by reviving the true spirit of Muslim nationhood all over the Islamic world.
We will never accept Israel. They are bombarding on the small children in the Palestine. They are Muslims. We are standing with them, and they are looking for the Pakistan, that they should come for the help for the Palestine.
The protesters sounded disappointed with the Prime Minister Imran Khan, who won last general elections partially with the pledge to pursue Muslim causes. Muslim causes in the world appears to be what matters to the common people in Pakistan. A lingering public resentment against France over repeated publication of blasphemous cartoons of the Prophet of Islam is yet another cause these students have been fighting for. This protest has followed gathering of millions of people on the streets of eastern city of Lahore a few days ago. such a huge crowd emerged to attend the funeral of Khadim Hussain Rizvi, a religious and political leader who, through his sustained protest, forced Prime Minister Imran Khan last week to ink an agreement with his government to expel French ambassador and officially boycott French products in Pakistan. Javed Rana, Rawalpindi.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked and
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech from IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Javdan. Please stay tuned. Imam Ali alayhi salam, in a beautiful saying, states, if someone avoids committing sins, thus his obligations, and behaves properly according to Islamic rulings, then there will be no difference whether death comes to him or he goes to death. This sentence of Imam Ali alayhi salam means that such people become powerful to the extent that they can pass this world and go to the other world. This is how firm belief in Allah is. This is what the Holy Quran refers to as the thing from which everyone escapes. Death is the phenomenon from which most people flee. But why? Because they fear it. Because they are not ready for it. However, for some faithful men of God, this is like a divine intoxication. It gives them the sense of freedom from this materialistic world. They are powerful and firm at the time of this, and they leave this world as free as possible. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Muhammad Ali Jafdan. To find out more about this program and our other programs, log on to our website, parstoday.com/Ian Kalawislam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Yemen goes through hell every day. Poverty has been exacerbated by drought, famine, disease, embargo, and war. The Saudi-led campaign has opened a Pandora's box for the Yemeni people, including children. There are numerous reports that Yemeni kids as young as seven are being recruited by the Saudi-led campaign to kill or be killed while fighting against their will and against their homeland.
الحادث اللي حدث مؤلم جدا لجميع السعوديين.
A little child in red identifies himself on a hill, facing his enemy on the other hill. Blood, bombs, bullets, and bodies. These are drawings by former child soldiers recruited by the Saudi-led coalition, which show what's going on inside their minds. It clearly shows they have been robbed of their childhoods, but they're not alone. In 2019, UNICEF reported that there are more than 2,700 cases of children enlisted in combat in Yemen, pointing out that this would be the tip of the iceberg. Exclusive footage from Al Jazeera shows that these children are being recruited to ironically defend the Saudi border, as if billions of dollars worth of purchased arms and military equipment are not enough for that purpose. One of these child soldiers is Ahmad Al-Naghif from a village near Taiz, who left home when he was 15 years old. He'd been promised to get regular paychecks and a job in the kitchens of Yemeni military units on Saudi soil. We went because we were told we would be working in a kitchen and making 3,000 Saudi riyals, $800. So we believed them and got on the bus.
They know about the people that they are recruiting, people they are promising what seems to be large amounts of money, not delivering those large amounts of money, sometimes tricking them into being, thinking they're going to be workers, kitchen hands, or in some cases, and then being pushed into the front line with weapons. So I'm sure that they know about it, and I think it does reflect the fact that the Saudis have very little respect for people in their own system at the bottom of the heap, so to speak.
Investigative groups have identified a military camp in Al Burra, near the Saudi border, where the child recruits are being trained. The recruitment process is facilitated by human traffickers, and the recruits are given identification cards before crossing into Saudi Arabia and being placed into a military camp.
It's considered a war crime generally, because children, that is to say those under 18, are not considered capable of giving an informed consent to take on the responsibility of joining a military and being under orders to carry out what might be serious criminal activity. Remember that soldiers, since the Second World War, are regarded to have their own capacity to reject orders which require them to carry out crime. So there is a type of adult conscience and a capacity to, on the one hand, take on responsibility, on the other hand, to disobey orders, which are criminal orders. And so children are not capable of that. They're taken advantage of. And the trickery I mentioned before is something that also children are very susceptible to. So there's less chance of children rejecting those sorts of orders or standing up against resisting what they're being asked to do. So that's why there's this general consensus around the world that children should not be recruited into, particularly going into situations where they are engaged in conflicts that they don't understand.
According to Geneva-based human rights monitoring organization, SAM, many Yemenis are entering the kingdom under the pretext of receiving emergency treatment, only to be sent to the Yemeni-Saudi border to fight for Riyadh. The Saudi-led coalition is recruiting boys from schools, poor urban areas, and detention centers, inducing them to fight with a combination of bribes, indoctrination, and coercion, according to the Times.
I think it's really taking advantage of poor families, both Yemeni families in the border areas, and also poor families in the surrounding regions, including from Sudan, taking advantage of recruiting these young people, promising them, tricking them in some cases into sending their young people in to act as very ineffective soldiers in this terrible war. And it's also reflects, I think, a part of the Saudi culture of disrespect for these young people. They don't really care if they live or die.
But the Saudi-led coalition does not recruit only Yemeni children. In late 2018, Riyadh came under fire for recruiting Sudanese children to fight on its behalf in Yemen. Tens of thousands of desperate survivors of the conflict in Darfur, many of them children, are now fighting in Yemen. Most of them belong to the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, a tribal militia previously known as the Janjaweed. These children are reportedly being paid in Saudi riyals, the equivalent of about $480 a month for a 14-year-old novice. They receive an additional $185 to $285 for any month they saw combat. Their payments were deposited directly into the Faisal Islamic Bank of Sudan, partly owned by Saudis. According to the Times, Sudanese soldiers who fought in Yemen said that between 20% and 40% of their units were made up of children.
I think we need to understand what the Saudis represent in the region. That's very important, that the Saudis are there as an arm of the old colonial regime, of the British regime initially and now run by the North Americans, that they are a proxy for effectively a barrier between the British and the Americans being held accountable for their responsibilities for the terrible dirty war and the humanitarian catastrophe in Yemen, that really these young people that are being recruited by the Saudis are effectively masking the responsibility of the NATO powers that are sending so many arms and weapons to perpetuate this sort of war. And I don't think we can understand that unless we understand the role of the Saudis and the fact that they are only there to carry out the orders of these big powers from outside trying to manipulate events within the region. So I think that the role of Al Saud, generally the family, needs to be understood to understand why there are so many appalling acts going on, including the use of child soldiers to perpetuate this dirty war against Yemen.
A dirty game has been at play since the Saudi-led invasion of Yemen. With billions of dollars in their pockets, the Saudi-led gang is still trying to outsource the war. They want to keep the cost of the war at the lowest possible level. So they're using child mercenaries from poor backgrounds in Yemen or Sudan. Those whose lives are cheaper than the ones in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and Bahrain.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته And this is your host Ali Maytham You're listening to IRIB English Radio And this is For Humanity Well, we talked about establishing justice in the previous episodes Now, when Islam talks about the protection of honor The second important right is the right of citizen to protection of their honor In the address delivered on the occasion of the farewell Hajj to which I referred earlier The enchorment upon their honor, respect, and chastity was forbidden to one another. The Holy Quran clearly lays down, You who believe, do not one set of people make fun of another set. A. B. Do not defame one another. C. Do not insult by using nicknames. D. Do not backbite or speak ill of one another. Chapter number 49, verse number from 11 to verse number 12. This is the law of Islam for the protection of honor, which is indeed much superior to one in the better in the Western law of defamation. According to the Islamic law, it is proof that someone who attacks the honor of one person, then irrespective of fact, whether or not the victim is able to prove himself respectable and honorable person, the culprit will in any case get in due punishment. But the interesting fact about the Western law of defamation is that a person who files suit for defamation has to first prove that this man of honor and public esteem during the interrogation and is subject to scurrilous attack and accusation and in dust of the dens concealed to such an extent that he earns more disgrace than the attack of his reputation against which he had knocked the door of the court of law. On top of it, he has also produced such witness as would testify in the court that due to the defamatory accusation of the culprit, the accused stands disgraced in the eyes. Good glorious, what a suitable point of law and what an adherence to the script of law. How can this unfair and just law be compared to the divine law? Islam declared blasphemy as a crime irrespective of the fact whether the accused man is the man of honor or not, whether the words used by blasphemy have actually disgraced the victim and harmed his reputation in the eyes of public or not. According to the Islamic law, mere proof of the fact that accused said things which according to common sense could have damaged the reputation and the honor of the plaintiff is enough for the accused to be declared guilty of defamation. Well, when we talk about the sanctity and security of private life, Islam recognizes the rights of every citizen in its states. There should be no undue interference or encroachment on privacy of his life. The Holy Quran has laid down to the unjust, do not spy on one another. Chapter number 49, verse number 12. Or when Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, do not enter any house except your house unless you're sure of their occupant's consent. Verse number 27, chapter number 24. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam has gone to the extent of instructing his followers that a man should not enter even his own house suddenly or just like that. He should somehow or other inform the indicant to the dweller of the house that he is entering the house so that he may not see his mother, sister and daughter in a condition which they would not like anyone to see, nor would himself like to see in that condition. Peering into the houses of another person has also strictly been forbidden. Allahu Akbar. The Prophet has also forbidden people from reading letters of others, so much so that if a person is reading his letter and another person casts side glance and if he tries to read it, his conduct becomes irrespectable. This is the sanctity of privacy that Islam grants to individuals. Let's take a break now. We'll be right back.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. We talked about the privacy that Islam gives to human beings. Where in the world do you see where other people, the ones who actually violate the human rights or abuse the human rights, talk about human rights? Where do you see that in the world? But Islam, on the other hand, in the modern civilized world, we can find the only letters of the other people are read and they're censored. But even the photocast copies are retained for future use or blackmail, even bugging devices and secretly fixing the houses of the people so that he can hear and tape from a distance the conversation taking place behind closed doors. In other words, it's meant that there is no such thing as privacy to all the practical purposes, and the private life of an individual does not exist. The means of a fake spoil them is what the spies, CID or FBI agents are spread all around the country. Find out the affairs of men and the people being looked for one another with suspicious so much so that the people are afraid of talking freely in their houses. Let some word should escape from the lips of their wives and children may have put them in embarrassing situation. In this manner, it has become difficult for a common citizen to speak freely, even in his own house, and society begins to suffer from a state of general distrust and suspicion. This is the private life that you give. No wonder why there are people talking about it. If you Google about this guy who went to Russia, I'm not sure I can remember his name, but it was Swoden, if I'm not wrong. Swoden, he escaped from America, and right now I'm not sure he's in Russia. And he openly declared that the FBI is spying on the people. The Facebook company is looking through your messages and all the probably the conversation that you might have had in the past, which are probably embarrassing if it come out in public. Well, guess what? They've already read in the Facebook department. So Islam has talked about the privacy, you know, you're not supposed to be spied, or, you know, it's kind of wrong to do that. Ethically, it's wrong. Well, when it comes to the topic of security of personal freedom, Islam has also laid down the principle that no citizen can be imprisoned unless his guilt has been proven into an open court. To arrest a man only on the basis of suspicion, to throw him into a prison without a proper court proceeding and without providing him a reasonable opportunity to product his defense is not permissible in Islam. It is related in the hadith, once the Prophet was delivering a lecture in the mosque, when a man rose during the lecture and said, "O Prophet of God, for what crime have my neighbors been arrested?" The Prophet heard the question and continued his speech. The man rose once again and repeated the same question. The Prophet again did not answer and continued his speech. The man rose for the third time and repeated the same question. Then the Prophet ordered the man's neighbor to be released. The reason why the Prophet had kept quiet when the question was repeated twice earlier was the police officer was present in the mosque, and there was proper reason for arrest of the neighbor of this man. He would have got up to explain his position. Since the police officer gave no reason for these arrests, the Prophet ordered the arrest and person should be released. The police officer was aware of the Islamic law, and therefore he did not get up to say, "The administration is aware of the charges against the arrest man, but they cannot be disclosed in public." If the Prophet would have inquired about this guilt in camera, I would have enlightened him. If the cop had made such statement, he would have been dismissed. Then there, the fact that the police officer did not give any reason for the arrest, the open court was sufficient reason for the Holy Prophet to give immediate order for the release of the arrest man. The injunction of the Holy Prophet is very clear on this point. Whenever you judge between people, you should judge with a sense of justice. Chapter number 4, verse number 58. So that is it for today. Don't forget to visit our website, which is www.parstoday.com, and click on the tab Call of Islam, where you can find our programs as well as this one. And you can email us and contact us on englishradio@irib.ir. With that being said, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
رحمة أرسلته للعالمين وعلى آل النبي أجمعين فبهم نرجوك أحسن ختمنا.
Iranian Radio Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.